The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. TNT. Sonia Poulton and today's news talk. TNT.
Jim Ferguson is such a great commentator. I thoroughly enjoy his no-nonsense approach to these things. And good morning, TNT world, says Craig. Good morning, Craig. Little bit tardy this morning. Only joking. Right, where are we? We are, of course, entering our second hour. And I'm starting to get used to this now. For the first week, it was a little bit tricky. You know how it is when you have to adjust to new scenarios, but we're here. And I want to look at something that is deeply disturbing me at the moment. I am deeply uncomfortable that legacy media, mainstream media, whatever you want to call it, have decided to set itself up again as troll hunters. You can actually see on the screen the face of a lady known as Brenda Leyland. And Brenda Leyland is a perfect, very sad example of the last time mainstream media set themselves up as troll hunters. Let me explain. This weekend, the Mail on Sunday tracked down an anonymous TikTok user who was asked questions about Kate Middleton. The wording in the article is almost identical to when the media went after its previous prey, which was, as I say, Brenda Leyland. They tell us that Paul Condren, an internet user described as a, in quotes, cruel British troll who used Chinese social media platform TikTok to cash in on lurid Kate claims, is unmasked at last. The language continues. The aim is to incite their reader to absolutely hate this person. The Mail, as I say, was able to track down what they called a toxic troll to his girlfriend's two-bedroom home in southwest London, probably quite close to me. They say that Condren's other videos give his warped take on COVID, the Israeli-Gaza conflict. Chances are they probably align with where I'm coming from. And I am deeply concerned at this moment for Mr. Condren's safety. Hopefully he's in a better place than Brenda Leyland was when the media went after her. If you're not familiar with Brenda Leyland, let me share her story because it's just so sad and it tells us so much about legacy media and when they pick their targets. Brenda's story is featured in my documentary, Madeleine McCann, Public Relations and Saving Reputations. And it's about really the whole big media storm that exists around the world's most famous missing child. Brenda was a social media user who, like many people, did not believe the official abduction narrative. Brenda, she'd contacted me previously. She'd read the Portuguese police files and she was extremely well versed in the details of Madeleine McCann's disappearance. And supporters of the McCanns, with the support of a former cop, pulled together a dossier of people who were questioning the official narrative. I featured in the dossier, proudly so. That was handed to Metropolitan Police to investigate. And because, of course, no one is allowed to question the narrative of the world's most famous missing child, whom British taxpayers have paid over £40 million to investigate her disappearance for a crime that didn't happen in this country. But you be quiet. You shut up and put up. And anyway, so what they did was this dossier had been given to Sky News, and in particular their reporter Martin Brunt, who saw fit to doorstep a private individual. I think there's a whole different world to me doorstepping politicians and public figures to going after a private individual who's making comments on the internet, right? Brenda, as I say, she was named in the dossier. They doorstepped her at a quiet Leicestershire home in Burton Overy. I went to Burton Overy. I went to her home after her death to report from there. The confrontation was played on repeat rotation for 24 damn hours. I can't overstate that. It's just horrendous what that did to that woman. And then MSM came together to denounce her and they hounded Brenda out of her home. She upped and left. She checked into a local hotel and 2 days later, she was found dead. I went to the various inquests and I'm in no doubt whatsoever that this was not only trial by media, but they essentially drove Brenda to her death by deeming her a troll. It impacted her entire life so greatly that it did actually influence her decision to kill herself. If indeed that is what happened, because some people even question that official narrative. And certainly having witnessed the inquest, I had many, many questions. Not least, I actually witnessed the coroner flirting with Martin Brunt. Like, oh, he's a TV star. It was one of the most egregious inquests I've ever witnessed, frankly. My point is this. When mainstream media target someone as a troll, they do not care about the damage they are doing to that person's life. And let us be clear here. When mainstream media call people trolls, it's because people are usually asking the type of questions that mainstream media routinely refuse to ask. They are either compromised or in debt to something, including information from the royal family, the McCanns or whomever, really. And they seek to protect that person from whom they deem to be the troll. And they set out to destroy, without a care, the private lives of private citizens. So, yes, I am deeply concerned for Paul because he's clearly being set up in the same way as Brenda Leyland, who died almost 10 years ago now. So rest in peace, Brenda Leyland, and anybody else who dares to ask questions about official narratives and are then targeted by, well, the establishment's favourite media, legacy media. And on that note, let's go and look at some real decent headlines from a real decent journalist, Gemma Cooper.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I've been in the car all day and I got to listen.
Can't get enough of it.
You guys are doing a great job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is indeed today's News Talk TNT. It's Tuesday morning. It's just gone 10 past eight in the UK. And this is Gemma Cooper with the second round of UK headlines today. How are you again, Gemma? Anything interesting occurred in the last hour?
Well, I was just listening to that, actually. That's a story. I remember that story at the time. And I do remember it was before I was truly awake. I was having the glimmerings of my awakening, my spiritual shift. So I was still, and I was still in the legacy media. And I remember the treatment of Brenda. And I remember reading how they presented her. And I was thinking, oh my God, she's just an evil, unhinged, mentally ill woman. They really did a hatchet job on her. It was so convincing. And yet, you know, now I've had my shift and I see things as they really are. All she was one of us, somebody who was questioning official versions of events, which still to this day with Madeleine McCann remain completely unsolved. And as you rightly say, millions of taxpayers' money on a very high profile case. There's so many unanswered questions with that. Richard D. Hall with his forensic analysis and his Madeleine documentary series. I would urge anyone to go and watch that. There's loads of unanswered questions. And of course, she's one of us. She questioned things. And isn't it interesting that the mainstream media, with its paradoxical hypocrisy, would say this person is an awful troll and she's distressing the McCanns, therefore she must die. You know, it's almost like the last 4 years of COVID, you know, let's drag people out onto the streets and bludgeon them to death for not getting vaccinated to stop people dying. That's where the gap is in between people who are completely brainwashed and inured to the system. And how could you dare question authority? That's the truth. And people like us that go, no, authorities lied all since in civilization, authority has lied and will continue to lie to protect itself. And you have to have a perception shift. Now, Martin Brunt, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Deathbed revelations are very common. Maybe he will realize, oh my God, my whole life has been a lie. I had that point in my career as in the mainstream. My whole life has been a lie. How is this a valid way to make a living? But before that, I was in it. I was in it and I believed it. It is an internal thing. It's not an intellectual thing. But, you know, they handed that woman to her death because she upset the McCanns. So we'll go after her. You know, we'll do the very thing we're accusing her of and we won't see that we're doing it. Oh, that one is making my blood boil, actually, Sonia. It really is on a Tuesday. That one. Oh,
I didn't mean to. I should say Martin Brunt has said, and he did say at the inquest, that this will haunt him for the rest of his days, that it wasn't his choice to put it out. He actually did speak to her. She gave him time after he doorstepped her initially. He waited outside her home and she'd gone out to lunch with a friend. She came back and then invited him in, spent half an hour explaining to him about the police files, about all, the whole investigation. And he still went away, still produced that report. She rang him the following day. He asked her how she was. She said she felt suicidal. And they still went ahead with the report. And as I say, on repeat rotation, it was absolutely horrendous. Even the report, the sort of witness statement from her son was demonizing. It talked about her with mental health issues. And a lot of it overlooked the fact, which I later found out, was about her community spirit at Burton Overy. She was a regular member of the church congregation. She did loads in the community and for charity. That was completely overlooked. As you say, she was demonized. She was a monster. This woman must be stopped, and all for daring to ask questions. And we're seeing it repeatedly, aren't we? You're literally not allowed to ask questions anymore. You even said this yesterday, Gemma, which, you know, one of the reasons that people love you, Gemma, is because you're just so clear and you have such clarity of thought, which you're able to articulate so well. And one of the things that you said yesterday, very simplistic, was about this idea that we are just allowed to ask questions. That, you know, where have people been for the last 4 years? This whole idea that we aren't allowed to ask questions. And if we do, we're conspiracy theorists, and then we're contributing to the clampdown of our freedoms. And I just love the way you just, you know, you go through it like a whirling dervish. Doesn't she? She just destroys all this nonsense. Anyway, Gemma, enough of me telling you how fabulous you are, because you already know it anyway. But tell us, what headlines are you going to hit us? Well, where you do, you are like, when I went to this event on Friday, and people were like, we love hearing you and Gemma talk together. And I do really enjoy our conversations. I always learn something from you. I do. I think you're an excellent reporter, and I'm so glad you escaped the matrix. So Sonia and Gemma, says Catherine in the comments. Right. So say all of us. Talk to us, Gemma.
Oh, I'm blushing. Oh, clutch my pearls in horror. Thank you very much for that. I really appreciate it. And I do appreciate everyone. If you're listening or watching or however you get TNT, we appreciate the support greatly here. And I really appreciate this platform because I would be exiled from the matrix otherwise. But talking of people that question the system, the headlines today, of course, for us, the dominating one is Julian Assange. He finds out at 10:30 this morning at the High Court in London whether his appeal against his extradition can go ahead. That will mean another hearing, the appeal hearing itself. Let's hope it does go that way. Campaigners and supporters are now gathering outside the High Court in London. Farmers have been in Westminster protesting. Hundreds of tractors arrived outside Westminster last night. Farmers went on a go slow around Whitehall, protesting against regulations and cheap food imports. It's the largest farmers' protest of its kind. I know you're just talking to Jim Ferguson about that. Big story, though, for farmers in the UK. They're not the most radical of people. China yesterday was officially branded a threat to the UK. It was branded the official source of a hacking scandal in 2021, where millions of people had their data hacked from the Electoral Commission. But sanctions have been issued, but many, many Tory MPs are saying they don't go nearly far enough. And another scandal from the corporations. Millions of smart meters now, nearly 4 million in the UK, are not working properly, leaving customers stressed with inaccurate bills, thousands of pounds in debt, saying they can't pay, and suppliers just not bothering to go into homes and replace them, even though they are bound to by trade regulations.
I mean, I think we better go in on the smart meters. I have a few things to say on that, but do tell us more.
Well, basically, the jump in the amount of meters not working has gone up significantly in less than a year. Last June, there were 2.7 million smart meters that weren't working properly in the consumers' homes across Britain, and that's now gone up to 3.9 million in just a few months. Energy UK, a trade association that represents energy bodies, say suppliers are obliged to fix faulty meters as soon as they're reported. That hasn't been the case. Some people have waited up to 2 years to get faulty meters replaced. One case study quoted said it left her constantly frightened, constantly stressed, couldn't sleep. And eventually British Gas, which was the centre of that one, went in and replaced it, but only after a trade body brought it to the public domain. Of course, smart meters, they're installed with the premise of it makes your life safe and convenient and easy for the consumer. Reading your energy usage on a continual running on time basis in the present, and then feeding that data back remotely via a kind of Bluetooth connection, if you like, to your supplier. However, if that connection is interrupted, if the internet signal goes down, if the satellite's in the wrong place and your reading doesn't get fed in real time, you get sent an estimate. The trouble with a lot of smart meters is they're picking up data from other properties, from businesses, and they're not getting the data right. So customers are being sent estimates. One woman, £3,500. £3,500. She lived on her own. She was a pensioner. She had this bill for £3,500. It took months, years of wrangling to get another meter installed. And the problem with her smart meter was when it was fitted, they didn't change the configuration. So it was basing itself on her old meter. So they're just not fitting them properly, these big, massive energy corporations, of which there are dozens in the UK, and they're all making multi-billion pound profits, not millions, billions, off consumers. So it is a huge scandal. 2 years to get problems resolved. Some people are pensioners. Some people just die before they can get their debts sorted out. Many people just pay the debts up front because they're so worried about getting a bill. Then they realize they've been paying too much. Try and get the money back from the energy suppliers. And the energy suppliers say, no, we'll just hold on to it and we'll offset it against your future bills. Thousands. No wonder they're making billions of pounds in profits. It's a huge scandal. It's a ripoff. And of course, that's notwithstanding the actual physical danger that some of these smart meters do pose in terms of the radiation they give off, the microwave frequencies they give off. And of course, It's all sold to the consumer as safe and convenient and better for you. Well, not the millions of households in the UK that are facing this problem this morning.
I mean, absolutely spot on. Thank you, Brett, calling us the dynamic duo here. Thank you. We appreciate that very much. We'll be gunslinging next. I completely agree with you, Gemma. Here's the thing. About 10 years ago, I interviewed two people. One was a woman who was a tech specialist. The other, the man, was an EMF specialist. And both of them said, do everything you can to resist the march of smart meters. And I have done so, even though they can be incredibly threatening, coercive, make it seem like that it's mandatory, which it absolutely isn't. And there are many issues attached to it, not least they can obviously control our fuel supply. So in the same way as I would say, cash is king. Keep your cash. Do not allow central banks to be able to press a few buttons and deny you access to your money. Be incredibly careful that the energy companies don't deny you. Remember when they were saying to us throughout COVID, oh, we're going to have periods where if you switch off your electricity and if you switch off your energy, then we will reward you. Some energy firms were actually saying that, weren't they? They were warning about blackouts. Yeah, they're warning about blackouts because they're controlling so many people through the smart meters. But also there is the issue, obviously, about EMFs and about what sort of levels of radiation the smart meters are giving off. So I say resist. And also Gemma has just added really sort of another layer of exactly why we shouldn't picking up other people's information. You know, I mean, this is sort of extraordinary. It's completely contrary to what they said smart meters were about, right? And I think we're all really sick of it. They're also making the energy debt figure artificially inflated, says Ray Can. Yes, that's true. So I don't think there is a great deal to advocate for smart meters personally. And Gemma, you don't sound like a big fan yourself either.
No, and I do think this is just a huge example of corporate greed. You know, they get the smart meter into your home because they've got targets that they have to meet, the energy suppliers and corporations. Once they meet their targets, I think they get a kickback from government for meeting those targets. Government wants us all ruled smartly. We know that. Once the meter is in, their job is done effectively. It doesn't matter the meter's not working properly. It doesn't matter you're landed with a bill for £3,500. It doesn't matter that you're so stressed you can't sleep at night. They do not care. This is corporate greed. Corporations don't have a heart. They don't have a soul. They barely have a brain. And it's only because there's campaign groups pushing for these pensioners, a lot of them as well. They're pensioners who have just been so completely stressed about all of this that this has come to the public light. But what I think the shock is, 2.7 million of these devices were not working last June. That has now jumped up, according to figures this morning from the Department of Energy, to 3.9. It's almost a million more now aren't working in just a few months. How many more are going to be faulty? How many more are not going to be fit for purpose? I mean, I do think we'll just have to end it here. We're wrapping up. But this whole thing of people not paying energy bills, which is a growing movement of people saying, look, I'm only actually renting the meter. You can't be charged for electricity or gas. It's a natural supply. You know, there is that groundswell of opinion. I know some people in the freedom movement in the West Country that have done it. They've written to the energy suppliers. They've said no contract. They've done all the legal research. You know, it takes a lot. It takes a fight. But people are being successful and they're writing back. You know, as soon as you get the letter, you write straight back with another letter. I'm not advocating that people do that, but I do know people have done it with some success. One of them is a woman. She's got balls of steel. She's taken on the energy suppliers. And one of them, they went away. I think they got so sick of her, they went away, but she knew how to do it. And I can see why people do that and just stick two fingers up at these massive corporations. You're not taking on another human being. You're taking on a corporate body. Stuff them. I'm in fighting mode today. It's that
Love
story
it.
About that.
You
that,
are.
I am. Well, it's a story about Martin Brunn and the mainstream. And that's just indicative of the establishment and the corporations and the government. They're always sticking two fingers up every single day. And these poor people, millions of people with these huge bills, too frightened to go to sleep, too frightened to put the kettle on for corporations. Corporate greed. That's it. End of the lesson. I'm done.
We love a bit of fiery Gemma, don't we? I will be switching on to TNT throughout the day, Gem, looking for your headlines about Julian Assange, because I know that you will give me exactly the details and coverage that I'm looking for. And everybody, that is the second round of Tuesday's headlines with Gemma Cooper. I will be right back.
TNT's David Curtin.
In my mind, government spending in the UK is absolutely horrendous. It has got completely out of control over the last 14 years of Conservative rule and 13 years before that of Labour rule. You would probably be astounded if you actually knew how much the government spent. In this financial year, these are the figures, the estimate for how much it wants to spend on everything or how much it needs to spend is £1.2 trillion or £1.2 million, if you like, which is an amount of money that we cannot really comprehend.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT.
This is generally the view of people. Oh, we don't know much about Assange. But you should know, because whether you know it or not, he is fighting for you.
For your courage and leadership and tenacity in journalism and publishing.
Since 2010, Assange has been held in progressively narrower, darker, colder, and crueler spaces.
He has been detained since the 7th of December 2010 in one form or another.
And we are now here after years of imprisonment.
WikiLeaks is a non-state hostile intelligence service.
I think the man is a high-tech terrorist.
A high-tech terrorist.
A traitor, a treasonist.
He has to answer for what he has done.
Assange faces up to 175 years in prison for publishing classified documents exposing U.S. war crimes.
The U.S. government narrative about Julian is a complete fraud. It is a complete fraud from A to Z.
Julian took on the most powerful countries in the world, basically all of them.
We now have confirmed that there were plans to kidnap Julian here in the center of London, or even assassinate him.
No one who instigated that illegal and immoral war has been brought to justice. But the great truth teller sits behind bars.
If wars can be started by lies, peace can be started by truth.
Julian Assange is a hero.
What if everything we thought we knew about somebody was a lie? Would we be willing to go on a new journey of understanding? This is a story of deception, lies, bravery, and a man who risked everything to bring the truth to light.
Mr. Assange shows all the symptoms that are typical for a person that has been exposed to psychological torture over a prolonged period of time.
He looked at me intensely and said, "I hate to say this." He then hesitated, visibly troubled and searching for words. And then he finally said, "Please, save my life."
May future generations have the ability to speak without restraint. May our children and their children know truth and have access to information that leads to justice. Wherever Julian goes, free speech goes with him.
If there is a bird that is about to take flight, stretch her wings and rule the skies, may it be a peace dove and no longer a bald eagle.
If you think Assange is a traitor, he's a rapist, he's a narcissist, he's a hacker, I don't blame you, because you have been deceived. And if you think you've not been deceived, that's normal, because otherwise it wouldn't be deception.
Ladies and gentlemen,
today's News Talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
Of course, we're all here on tenterhooks waiting to for that judgment to be handed down at the High Court regarding Julian Assange. Obviously, that is a promotional trailer for the very brilliant film, The Trust Fall. I urge anyone to watch it. I think if you're in any doubt at all about what has happened to Julian Assange over the last decade plus, that will clarify for you how this man has been hounded and sort of witch hunted. I mean, it's a bit of a theme on today's show. We were just talking about how people are often called trolls when all they're doing is actually asking pertinent questions about official narratives, and how, for example, Brenda Leyland was hounded to her death by mainstream media, and obviously Julian Assange, a journalist, hounded as well. Now, today, going to switch it up completely, but also being hounded to a certain degree as well. I'm joined by Penny Ellis. Penny, lovely, lovely Penny Ellis, who was on a Big Brother. I think it was Big Brother 2, wasn't it, Penny?
And yeah, 2001.
That's right. And the latest series of Celebrity Big Brother is just finished. The music manager, Louis Walsh, came in fourth place. He's talked about his experience. He talked about some of the issues that he was suffering from, insomnia and anxiety. Did you experience anything like that when you were in the house, Penny?
Well, it's quite interesting because in our day, we just went in and we didn't think of the consequences because there was no social media. There was no, we were the first people to do something that's never been done before. So for us, it was just a bit of a laugh. So we went in with that actual authentic innocence of literally just going in, doing very basic things, screaming and shouting when we felt like it, having an argument and just doing very, very ordinary things. And we didn't know about reality telly. We didn't know about the effects. But like with anything like that, you know, you just think, like you said to me last year, you're not trained for fame. I find it very interesting that they are trained for fame, yet that lady came out vulnerable, and obviously he's got anxiety, because if you put yourself through that thing, you're going to have an effect. It's going to have an effect on you, which they now know because obviously they've got duty of care. But well, obviously my dad came out and I had to then deal with my anxiety, and I wrote my book up, and it's taken me 20 years to get myself well from real despair and suicidal thoughts. And last year you said to me in your interview, take good care of yourself. I literally highlighted that and stuck it on my wall and kept saying that to myself. Your words had such an effect. The way you say things is so wonderful. And it really lifted my heart, gave me strength to know I can go through this, because that was the hardest thing I've done, is write my book, Meet Me at the Mirror. So I cannot thank you enough. So I'm just glad I had the opportunity to thank you today.
Oh, Penny, yeah. That's incredibly touching. Thank you. Listen, let us just pause a second. We're just going to briefly go to some news headlines, but we're going to come right back and we're going to hear properly from the very lovely Penny Ellis.
I got a news flash for you.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. The White House continues to shrug off claims that Ukraine played a part in Friday's terrorist attack in Moscow, saying the sole responsibility lies with Islamic State. China's warned relations with the Philippines have reached a crossroads following yet another aggressive confrontation in the South China Sea. And US presidential candidate Donald Trump has warned Israel to wrap up its war in Gaza because it's losing the world's support.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
I'm here talking to Penny Ellis. Penny was one of the more controversial but loving characters that to emerge from the whole Big Brother. And Penny was just telling us really that it essentially took her 20 years to recover from the experience. You had it bad, Penny. They came after you. They mocked you. They ridiculed you. They hounded you, didn't they? And for really nothing, nothing at all, just being a good Big Brother contestant, right?
Yeah, I think that for them, they needed ratings and they were experimenting. Like, you know, so basically the ratings were dropping. So they just thought, I know what, you know, and they just started looking at, you know, more extreme behavior in the house. And I unfortunately was one of the people that they targeted because I was cooking all the time. And that caused controversy because obviously we didn't do all this all these fancy dressing up things that go on now. I found it very painful watching Big Brother in the last years, because it's all so false with all these tasks. You're not seeing just people feeding chickens and having and I just literally had a shower and I just was rubbing myself down and getting myself together and didn't even think about it, because there's supposed to be a 15 minute time delay. And that went all over the world, 2 weeks on the front page, and literally everybody who's anyone. And it didn't help, because when we came out, because like I said, we were an experiment in itself. So when we came out, we had Hollywood status stardom, which we didn't understand and found it very amusing. So Bodyguard and private jet and all that things taking us places. Even at the wrap party, we had everybody there. And I remember one of my friends, Peter, brushing past the Spice Girls saying, no, I don't actually want to speak to you. I want to talk to Paul. You know, it was a bit like we had that status and we didn't know how to handle it. And at the end of the day, they made the story. And then I didn't really know how to fight that story. So I just let it be. And obviously it just ran and ran and ran. It's obviously continually in the papers. And I used it for the benefit of me with my book coming out. I just, you know, it's still out in the papers now. It's still on the news. And I just think it's amazing how something can be written and take on its own organic form. And once it's written, people will just believe it. But I never even did it. If I'd done it, then it's something I didn't even do, you know.
Right.
Not, you know, if I'd,
right.
You know, if I'd done something in there, then I'd have put my hands up and go, yeah, but I didn't even do it. So what I've struggled with is being accused of something I never, ever done. You know,
terrible, really awful. Show viewers your book, Meet Me at the Mirror, Dealing with Reality. Oh, no, actually, unfortunately, we can't see you on the screen, which is a pity. I have a copy of that book, but it's called Meet Me at the Mirror, Dealing with Reality. It is absolutely brilliant. It is a real insight. And Penny, you're a former teacher, aren't you?
Yes, yes. I love my teaching. And my school was just down the road from the Big Brother house. And also I've got my Christian faith, which I'm, you know, using, and that's sustained me. And I think they knew all that. So I was the born again Christian teacher who flashed her diggy dongies on telly. You know, that was a great line for the headlines, you know.
They did have it all. And one of your quotes was, I think it's so profound. I lost all my money, my reputation, my church, my job, my self-esteem, my friends, my home. 2 weeks in the house, I lost everything. That is such a sobering lesson. People automatically, we live in an era where many people want to be famous and they see reality TV, certainly Big Brother, as one way of making them famous. But you are a very sobering lesson about why everything is not as it seems. So, and also what we've also heard, of course, we had somebody on earlier to do with suicide prevention. Well, there have been many suicides associated with reality TV, right? At least 38 at the last count.
Yes, exactly. And that's a terrible thing. You know, and I think to myself, duty of care came in 2018. There's a place in America, UCAN, they've set up now for, I think people are more aware, because obviously we're socially aware and everything's a bit more politically correct and that people can't say things or do things. But I mean, in my day, my phone was hacked. I never, you know, people could write what they liked. You know, they could say what they liked about you. You know, and talk about you. I mean, there was a massive spread in the paper about my dress sense, my terrible clothing in the house. You know, nowadays we can't dare talk about anyone's shaming. You know what I mean? So in those days, it was free for all on all levels of your personality and all levels of your physicality. It was hysterical. Reading back on it all, it made me feel so ill, but made me laugh. There's thousands and thousands of articles. Can't believe wasting newspaper time all about my, you know, I don't know, habits, my dress sense, my, you know, it's fascinating. But nowadays they'd never get away with it, you know, which is good to know it's, but then again, all these people coming out of these shows, they're still having the effect. You know, what you don't realize is when you put yourself, I didn't even realize, I went in and the school said, we'll see you back the day after you come out. No one thought it was anything. We just went and had a little break from our jobs.
Right.
You know, like we didn't do this for, get on telly. We didn't imagine ourselves on telly because you all ever saw Skarsgård and Hutch or something, or Murder, She Wrote. You know, you didn't think you were going to be on telly. And once you're in there, like with these, even these celebrity people, they forget the cameras are there. You're just yourself, you know, have a burp, have a fart, I don't know, scratch your nose. And at the end of the day, you just are yourself and you don't realise the camera's zooming in on you. And it's massive. And they come out to that. you know, and what do they want? Because if you want to have, I don't want any more. I'm not writing the book for recognition of, hello, I'm back, I'm Penny. I've written it to tell people a moral story. I'm going to be setting up a little podcast just saying, how do you do it without God? I want to go back down the Christian route. I want to do charity work. They're coming out of it. Why do you want this recognition? And if you want that recognition, you're going to have to take with it the criticism that comes with it. Like last year, a few people were like, you know, why do you think you're doing this? You know, and I'd say, well, I'm not doing it to be Penny again or, you know, fancy. I just want to do it to just say to people, this is how it can be, you know, and to tell people who never knew even, you know, the truth of what I went through, which was lovely to be able to reveal that to people. I said in the book things I'd never said before, like when I had the OK magazine, you know, what they did to me, you know, there's things in the book which I've never told anyone, you know, and being really hounded and really manipulated. You know, my mum said that people made a lot of money out of you, you know, so everything was not right, you know. But then again, you know, that's if someone else can be helped with that, know that you don't need to be famous. Just do something nice in the world. You
right.
know, just do something nice for someone, for goodness sake. You know, why
right.
what do you want fame for?
I think it's really important. I think your book is really important. I have a copy of it right there to the left of me on a bookshelf. If I could reach across and get it, I would. I might be able to get it in the break and give everybody a flash of it. I think it's really important, not least because you're a teacher. It's really beautifully written, but also it's full of profound one-liners. You yourself are full of these profound one-liners. And one of the things that you talked about, because obviously it was at the beginning of Big Brother, it was the second series. It hadn't yet made the massive, massive dents that it was going to go on to. People still weren't completely fully aware of how it would impact their lives. But one of the things that you said about the attempts of going back into normality, this idea, for example, that you could begin teaching again a day after coming out of Big Brother, with hindsight, absolute madness. And what you said, great quote, getting back onto the workforce proved to be challenging because you were too famous to be normal, but not famous enough to survive. That is so profound, Penny.
Yeah.
Tell us. I mean, that's it, isn't it, in a nutshell?
Well, that's how I felt. And I did keep trying to go back to teaching, you know, over the last 20 years. And I didn't understand why the hysteria was there. You know, when I first went back to teaching in 2002, I moved down to Hastings. I thought, oh, no one will know me here. And, I went to the school and then 500 people turned up, newspapers, people wanting autographs, parents, students. Oh, it was a nightmare. And they sent me home. They still paid me. And then over the last 20 years up to lockdown, I kept having lovely jobs, which I loved. But then obviously then this kids would start finding me. I don't know why, because I used my, you know, used my married name and I didn't look like me. And then at the end of the day, I just would have to leave. And I found it very, very, very weird that people remembered me, because I wasn't even on social media till 2020. I only joined social media because I bought my first Christian book out, and I didn't understand why people remember me because I wasn't even trying to sell myself. But it's been constant. I thought, well, I might as well write the book, because everywhere I go, and I used to come home, I'd go, well, why are they going on about it? You must have said something. I'm going, I didn't say anything. And I didn't understand why people still remember me. And then it was terrifying joining social media, because I thought, bloody hell, you know, sorry. That the basically people will, you know, maybe they won't, maybe they'll be horrible, you know, because then you've got that fear, haven't you, of you know, people, you know. But people liked me and they remembered me, and that I find that very humbling, and I find that really unbelievable, but people have always seemed to remember me, you know, so it's weird. I find it really weird. So
I remembered you.
Yeah,
I remembered you. I mean, nowadays, obviously, Big Brother and the like, as Chris says in the comments, is now populated by narcissistic attention seekers. But then it wasn't. It felt very much like some sort of social experiment. People need to remember that at the beginning. It really felt like something really interesting was being observed and taking place in our society at the beginning. And that was kind of like the false sense of security you were lulled in by, really. But yeah, Penny, the reason people like you is you're just a nice person and you come over really nicely as well. I'm going to have to let you go there, which is always a pity because she's so lovely, everybody. This is Penny Ellis, and she is, well, she's not only one of the more entertaining, more interesting characters to have emerged from the Big Brother franchise, but she's also written a really important book, and that is Meet Me at the Mirror, Dealing with Reality. This, everybody, is Penny Ellis. Thank you, Penny. Have a lovely Tuesday.
Thank you
very excellent
much.
Care of yourself. Lovely to have you with us. I'll be right back.
Thank you. Almighty might not see it coming. It's prediabetes, and it captures one in three adults. You may not even know you have it, but you can escape. Take the 1-minute prediabetes risk test to know where you stand. With early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
The next time you think you can illegally handle your mobile phone while driving and get away with it, think again. Phone detection cameras are in operation on New South Wales roads.
Hello.
So if you're driving and illegally handle your mobile phone, you can stop it or cop it.
Live from London with Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk, TNT.
Oh, isn't Penny Ellis lovely? She is absolutely lovely. I think nobody should underestimate the absolute impact of what happens to an individual when mainstream media decide to come after you full throttle. And in many respects, a great deal of this show today has actually been about that exactly. And I am now delighted to be joined by a true pro. She is a commentator who really understands the financial system and how it works. She's a personal finance expert. She's a TV radio presenter, you're a speaker. Did you really write 38 books, Jasmine?
I did. And the way you do it, the way you write 38 books is with most of them, you make them about that sort of size. Little books. I was at one point the little book queen. My bestseller, actually, which got into the Times bestseller, is called A Little Book of Abuse. It was about that sort of size. So, you know, you get the idea.
I'm impressed because there's a commitment involved. It doesn't even matter how little it is. There is a big commitment involved in producing a book. So to produce almost 40, you've already impressed me, journalist to journalist. Great to have you with us this morning, Jasmine. I think some of the work you do is absolutely phenomenal. It's so important. You are a sort of thorn in the financial side of the establishment, which is wonderful. And let us tackle a story which people are horrified about. And I know it's been doing the rounds for a couple of days now, but we're going to really drill down on it. And it's about the UK still sending millions of pounds in aid to China every year. We're hearing this morning that in Parliament, they're really concerned about Chinese influence. Hacking has taken place. And yet there's this incredible story that government departments spent 8.2 million on Chinese aid engagement last year. And they're saying the figure is set to fall to 7.1 million next year. What on earth is going on here?
It's extraordinary, isn't it? And there seem to be two stories here, because on the one hand, it's like, hello, China, what, where, how? And also the fact that they're spending part of those millions is actually going on administration. And so, you know, you have firstly the frankly absurd situation where we, the fifth largest economy in the world, is giving money to China, the second largest economy in the world, which, you know, they, in my view, they should be giving it to us, because frankly we need a lot of help right now. But not only that, but you have the whole in macro, really, you have the whole situation, I believe, with charity generally. I am increasingly very concerned by most charities, certainly any charity of any size. There's a few small charities that I've found that are decent and don't waste money on administration, i.e., you know, in the pockets of various people, but very few. And here we have foreign aid from our government going to the wrong places, and not only that, but a significant chunk of it going into the pockets of goodness knows who that are charging for administration.
It is extraordinary. There's a whole pile of MPs who have come out against this. Sarah Champion, as one example, chair of the Commons International Development Committee, says for all its promises, it's shameful that the government is still dragging its feet over winding up financial support to China. And Luke de Polford of the Interparliamentary Alliance on China actually commented, it's hard to understand why a country with an economy six times the size of the UK, you know, is receiving this. As you so rightly said, they should almost be funding us. I think foreign aid is something that many British people, taxpayers and others, find egregious. And you can see why, can't you? There doesn't appear to be any particular reason why this is still allowed to occur. Any clues here?
Well, you know, I'm just putting my tin hat on for a moment. When it comes to foreign aid, much of it does go to NGOs, non-government organisations, which I used to think was, oh, good, not NGOs. Oh, marvellous. Well, it's not going to the government. Now I think, oh, NGO, I don't want money to go into NGOs, because quite often those are fronts for either government or more likely corporate entities or even CIA, MI5, you know, some really quite unpleasant organizations. And there does seem to be something really quite unpleasant about the whole system, frankly, where we as taxpayers, as you say, think, oh, yes, absolutely, we should give money to the poor countries abroad so that we can help them get out of their poverty. And then we find, actually, the money is going into these, frankly, shady organisations that have a friendly front, but behind, they're raging.
Yeah, it's insane, isn't it? Because in 21, the Foreign Office actually had pledged to cut this. They said they were going to cut it by 95%. I don't believe that a difference of 1 million from 8 million to 7 million is 95%. That sounds more like 5% than anything else.
Yes, absolutely.
It's awful, isn't it? And there is an issue about this lack of transparency. You're absolutely right. We don't ultimately know where this is going to. I mean, is there anything that we, as you're a financial expert, you're right on the, you know, the front line of this. Is there anything that we as the British taxpayers can actually do to rail against this other than petitioning them? Because it just seems so uniquely unfair when people in our own country are struggling to get by on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. I do agree. And I think, you know, as a nation, and it's not just us, many Western nations particularly, I think individually we do need to take more part in the government of our country, whether that means, as you say, petitioning. I mean, that's a start, complaining on social media, but also actually taking part, contacting our local MPs and local councils. There are also organisations like the Taxpayers Alliance that actually does contact government and lobbies government. But I think, you know, we as individuals, we need to create lobbying groups. We need to create pressure groups. We are quite, when we do it, we're actually quite good at it, but we need to, you know, get off our bottoms and actually do it and start making a fuss, because it's only when we make a fuss, you know, it's the squeaky wheel that gets the oil. When we make a fuss, government tends to listen after a while.
Yes, indeed. And we need to be highlighting these practices and these systems more, including the issue of central bankers. I noticed that you'd picked up on a particularly brilliant tweet. And wow, they're saying it out loud. Tell us what they, the central bankers, are saying out loud, Jasmine.
Absolutely. Well, I have been railing against central banks for a few years now. I mean, honestly, I cannot think of a single central bank that is doing anything right, and particularly not ours. Our central bank, the Bank of England, continuously gets it wrong, continuously projects the wrong ideas, which you know, I'm not an economist. I'm a personal finance journalist, and I can see that it's wrong. So if I can see that it's wrong, like, how can they not? For example, our lovely Bank of England said a couple of years ago, oh, inflation just be, it's not really inflation, it's just a little blip. And then they said, oh, it'll just be about 6 months and then it'll all go, you know, and it won't go very high. And as we know, it went into double figures and it stayed there. And even now we are hearing that inflation will come down, but I don't think it will. There are all sorts of pressures. We're seeing the price of oil go up, etc. So, you know, on that sense, they're useless. But the big thing that they have been doing, all of the Western central banks, the Fed, the Bank of England, the European Bank, etc., they've all been printing money like there's no tomorrow. In other words, they have been issuing bonds, government bonds, and the pensions companies and the big investors, they've been buying these bonds because they have to. They're told they have to. And that has created more money into our system. And this means that inflation has increased, because when you create more money, when you just print money, that means that you have to, you know, the prices go up because there is more money sloshing around the system. And this has happened here. It's happened in America. It's happened in Europe. It has meant that our currencies are worth less and less, to the point where increasingly people are wondering, are they going to be worth anything going forward?
Right. And this tweet that I'm looking at, it's great, isn't it? When you say they're saying yeah. out loud, they actually say we print money and people believe it. It's a great business to be in central banking. We fund ourselves. Shocking. Do you think, I mean, they're laughing about it. It's hilarious to them. Do you think this is the general attitude?
Well, I do wonder if it is, because frankly, you know, our governor of the Bank of England, Andrew Bailey, you know, you look at him and you think he's somebody who couldn't get a job at the gas board. And he must be laughing, you know, because he's never done anything really sparkling anywhere, as far as I can see. And he must be sitting there going, look at me, I'm the governor of the Bank of England. I don't deserve it, but I'm here. What the heck? You know, and it does seem that any time the government gets itself into a little bit of a problem, our government, other governments, they go, oh, could you just go and print some money? They go, yeah, don't worry, love. We'll just print a bit more money. Not a problem. We'll look after you. And we, the taxpayers, the consumers, are sitting here going, but have you seen the price of bread? Have you seen the price of, you know, and this is what they're doing to us.
Well, you've got them in full agreement about charity beginning at home in the comments. Now, I have a question that I've always wanted to ask Jasmine Birtles. Oh, yes. I want to know from the mouth of Jasmine Birtles, is cash really king, Jasmine? Should we be sticking with cash? Is there a fear?
Yes. Yes, we should be sticking with cash. And I speak as one who lives in central London and is very much a metropolitan. I used to go out of the house with nothing but my phone and a few cards and everything. Now I make sure I have cash. We have to hold on to cash because it cannot be tracked. And this is the very important thing. I mean, you know, as you've been talking about, you know, you mentioned, you know, the Chinesification, frankly, of this country. There's more and more surveillance. All our data is being mined. We're being watched. And in particular, when we spend anything, that is being watched. With cash, that can't be. So cash, I think, is a very, very important thing to keep. It's also a very good backup in case all our systems go down. And that's perfectly possible. You can have a cyber attack. Suddenly all the systems go down. You can't use your phone. You can't use your card, etc. And also, it means that it's much harder for them to bring in CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, which I consider to be the devil incarnate, personally, because as we know, CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, would mean that everything that you earned, everything you spent would be tracked by the central authority. And you could be told, no, you can't buy that because that's against our policy. So, yeah, keep cash.
Oh, I'm so glad I got to ask you that question. I once saw you made a video on it before. I think you've made several. And I thought, I want to just ask her, because I know that she has an understanding of these things. And you're absolutely right about the tracking as one example, but also the controlling, isn't it? Once they get us under CBDCs, if we dissent, imagine you said something bad about the government, let's press a few buttons. Yeah. That's it. Let's cut off your supply, which we cannot risk at all. Take the words from this brilliant lady on our screen this Tuesday morning. Thank you so much for joining us, Jasmine. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us and guide us through this absolute quagmire of what is happening in the UK to do with our finances. And thank you. Take good care of yourself to track down the dissenters, says Red. Indeed. And that about brings us to the end of Tuesday's show. But before we go, I have a news story that may be of interest to you, and quite controversial one. And it's to do with the P. Diddy lawsuit. There's a P. Diddy affidavit. And obviously, P. Diddy, he is a music entrepreneur. He's been hit with one lawsuit after another, some of them being paid off. But in this one, Prince Harry has been named in the affidavit. I think that is very interesting. Let me read you part of it. It actually talks about the financial benefits of the defendants. It names a number of big music industry bosses. And it goes on to say, Mr. Combs, which is Sean's real name, Puffy's real name, Sean Combs. Mr. Combs was known for throwing the best parties. Affiliation with and or sponsorship of Mr. Combs' sex trafficking parties garnered legitimacy and access to celebrities such as famous athletes, political figures, artists, musicians, and international dignitaries like British royal Prince Harry. That is interesting to see him named in that. Again, I want to thank you so much for joining us this morning. We've had such brilliant, brilliant guests. Obviously, we've had Jasmine Birtles there, brilliant Penny Ellis, Jim Ferguson, updating us with what's going on outside Parliament with the tractors rolling in. Still can't believe I've just had another look at the mainstream headlines. I'm thinking surely they will have something there about the farmers' protest. But no, not at all. I'm just also hearing that Diddy has been stopped at Miami Airport just hours after police raided his LA and Miami mansion. It's going to be interesting. Prince Harry seems to be all over the news, doesn't he? On an almost constant basis. But I've never, ever seen his name aligned with an affidavit to do with sex trafficking parties and saying that the person responsible, P. Combs, was able to buy influence. Anyway, on that note, I want to thank you all so much. Listen out on TNT for the results to do with Julian Assange today. The judgment is being handed down at 10:30 a.m. Let us all pray for him and for his family. Even if you don't believe in praying, please pray. On that note, that brings us to the end of Tuesday's show. Thank you so much to all the brilliant team for bringing us this brilliant guest today and just for bringing me here in an altogether better frame of mind than yesterday's full moon, which kind of got to me. But I'm here, I'm alive and kicking. I will be back tomorrow on Wednesday. But as for yourself, have a fantastic Tuesday because you absolutely are worth it. Take good care of yourself.